when you're poor, there really is a lot that money can buy to improve your health.
Welcome to Vox Dev Talks. My name is Tim Phillips. In low middle income countries, as everywhere, poverty and health are linked. But how are they linked? Why are some poor people healthier than others? And what effect do policies that are designed to relieve poverty have on health? These are just two of many interesting questions that are addressed in a paper published in the Annual Review of Economics on poverty and health. Adriana Yerasmune of UCLA is one of the authors. She joins me now. Adriana, welcome to Vox Dev Talks.
Thank you for having me.
Adriana, I said that there is a link between poverty and health. How strong is it?
Well, if you look across countries, people in countries that are rich live much longer lives than people in poor countries. Mm-hmm. And if you look within countries, rich people live longer than poor people. And that's true in rich countries and poor countries alike. Using the metric of how long people live, then that's pretty much true everywhere.
I noticed that we are focusing on poverty. Most of the research when I was looking at it is about the link between health and income. Are we researching the same thing here?
Well, the reason we talked about poverty instead of income is that when you look at the data in more detail, what you'll find is that when people are poor, the link between poverty and health is steeper. So as we get richer, people get healthier, but among the very rich, additional monies don't appear to buy as much health when you're at the top compared to at the bottom. So mathematically, the relationship is concave. It rises, but it rises faster at the bottom than at the top. And so it would seem like when you're poor, there really is a lot that money can buy to improve your health. And when you're rich, that's somewhat less true. It's still true, but not quite as true. So that's why we focus on poverty, because the relationship's very steep there. Now, there's no magical number above which or below which
yes,
something happens, but it's just more that at the top, it's harder to improve your health with more money.
The concept of poverty can be subjective. Is this the same link between poverty and health, this concave link that you're talking about? Is it true all over the world?
Well, that's hard to answer because the data is not as good in poor countries as it is in rich countries. And it's also not as good in the past in rich countries today. Uh-huh. And that's because when you have a substantial share of individuals that are working in agriculture and other very basic economic activities, we don't really know how to count their income.
Yeah.
Even individuals don't know how much money they have. So we have proxies for that. We go to their houses and we look at the amenities that they have in their homes. And then we can try to rank people who has more and who has less. But it's a very difficult exercise.
Now, I've slipped into talking about this as if the link is one way from poverty to health. But is there also the potential for poor health to cause poverty? And I guess if we've got that reverse link as well, does this make it much more difficult to do the research?
There's absolutely a link from health to poverty, a very well-established one. In fact, in some corners of the world, people will tell you that's all that's going on. It's from poor health to poverty rather than the other way around. There's a big debate on exactly what this association means. But I think we do know that when people are unhealthy, they rapidly become poor. And we also have evidence that if people are sick and we treat them and they are no longer sick, their economic circumstances improve substantially. So particularly in poor societies and in societies with poor access to medical care, this is a very important fact. Individuals who become disabled and are unable to work or who are sick, they're very rapidly unable to care for themselves and they must rely on other people. And I think this is one of the primary reasons for many of the social insurance programs that very rich countries have. You know, we have pensions for elderly people. We have health insurance for both the elderly and the poor, and in other countries for everyone involved. And we have a number of other programs that help people when they become disabled, etc. And I think it's because we recognize that those individuals won't be able to make any money and care for themselves. Mm-hmm. So the question is whether in rich countries today, that mechanism still operating given all the support that we have. And I think the answer is yes, that's still true, but perhaps less true than in poor countries. Now, the fact that poor people may be poor because they're unhealthy does not make it less true that the reverse is also happening, that having money or not having money is also something that can affect people's health. So I think both things are operating. The question is how much in different locations or at different times, how much does each of these mechanisms explain what we observe?
And to my question, does it make it much harder to interpret those observations if you have causation running in both directions at the same time?
Yes, it does. And, you know, there are some scholars like Sir Michael Marmot who would argue that in rich countries today, it's mostly from income to health, and other people who would argue that it's mostly from health to income, or that the relationship has been shown to be causal in that direction quite clearly, whereas the opposite is not true. In fact, when we give people money, it doesn't always improve their health. So there's substantial debate on that end.
So what are the ways, what are the mechanisms in which we assume that poverty damages health?
There are many mechanisms, but some of them are just quite obvious. Like if you cannot afford to eat well, eat sufficiently, have basic necessities, roof over your head, and access to medical care, then that's going to harm your health. So that's kind of what everybody thinks of immediately, and that's probably true. There are some more subtle things going on in there, because a lot of disease today in rich countries anyway is chronic disease, is disease that we accumulate over very long periods of time. We have behaviors and habits that lead us to someday get cancer or cardiovascular, but that happens when we are mature adults or elderly individuals. There are many ways in which living in a deprived way may affect your health. The burden of stress on the body, of having insecure resources, insecure relationships, and on the behaviors that individuals in those difficult circumstances may take, using drugs or eating poorly or not having good habits when it comes to sleep and exercise.
One thing you point out in the paper is that not all poor people are equally unhealthy. What is it about a place, a situation, a context, which might mean you could get better health outcomes if you're poor?
Well, that is a great question, and I'm not really sure that we know the answer to that. In the paper, we point out that the rich appear equally well off everywhere they are. They're just rich and live long. But there's great differences among the poor. And so we can find two locations that are equally poor, but one in which people live quite a substantial amount of time and one in which they don't. It's really important to dig into that and understand it better. I'm not sure we have an answer, but we do know some things differ. So there are locations in which there's poverty, but for example, there isn't a lot of crime or violent crime. And that's probably really important for individuals' mental well-being and stress. And in some areas, drugs are available, and in other areas, they are less so. We can always wonder why they're available or not, but the fact remains that if people become addicted to drugs, then that is very damaging to their health long-term. There are locations in which social connections are better than others. People are more connected to each other. And that is protective. Loneliness is very bad for people's health. So when people are socially connected, that provides a lot of physical and emotional support to people. So there's probably a lot of differences across locations in terms of how exactly the poor live that can moderate or lessen some of the negative impact of being poor. But I'm not sure that we have a full accounting of what are those circumstances that offset these negative effects of poverty. But there's definitely evidence that being poor is not the same everywhere.
You did mention that it is hard to establish that link from cash transfers, making poor people less poor, to the impact on their health. Why is it so difficult to establish this?
I think there's two reasons. The first is that we cannot in social sciences do randomized experiments or controlled experiments the way that you would in physics or chemistry or some other physical science. Mm-hmm. You know, so you ask yourself, what's the ideal way in which to establish this point? You would say, well, hello, let's give poor people some money. Isn't that simple? Mm-hmm. And the answer is yes and no, because how much money do you want to give them for how long in order to see the effect that you want to see? When we compare rich and poor people, we're not just giving somebody $50 once a month for 3 months. Or that's not going to make any difference. The difference between the rich and the poor is very large, and it's something that has gone on for a long time. By the time you get a heart attack at age 40 or 50 or 60, well, that's potentially many years before that you've had a difficult circumstance that have led to that. So in practice, what we do is we look at some randomized experiments, some of which do something like this, but maybe for a shorter period of time, maybe for a smaller amount of money. And sometimes we just look at what we call natural experiments, where for various random reasons out there in the world, something happens that looks like maybe could be informative on this question. And so when we look at those less than ideal experiments, the evidence is a little bit ambiguous about exactly what's going on. So you have papers that show that, you know, the day that somebody gets an unexpected tax return check, well, they go out and drink and do other things and they turn out to be more likely to die that very day. So it looks like giving people the money was not such a good idea, at least not on the very short run.
Okay, yeah.
So we have a number of experiments like that show that when people have money, they don't do only good things with it.
Right.
They all do bad things with it. Bad from a health point of view.
From a health point of view.
So when we look at these experiments, sometimes we find that people do better. Sometimes we find that they don't. Sometimes we find that, in fact, they do worse. And so the evidence is ambiguous. It's also ambiguous because, I mean, how exactly are we giving people the money? Do you treat the unexpected tax refund, a one-time cash refund, the same as you would an increase in your salary that goes on for the next 30 years? Is it the same as getting a really good job? What if a cash transfer you only get because you're poor, like you need to show that you remain poor in order to get it? What if the cash transfer is only going to last for 6 months and then it's going to end? And it seems obvious, we give people money, they need the money, they're going to do something with it. But it turns out all these details, they're not details, they really matter. People act in different ways, depending on how exactly they get the money, how long they know they're going to get it, why are they getting it? What does it make you think about yourself? And how does that change your lifestyle? You know, if I suddenly have like a great job and I'm going to have this job for the rest of my life, then that's one case scenario. People are going to change their and establish a certain lifetime based on those expectations. And that's very different than, say, winning the lottery. In fact, when you win the lottery, for example, a lot of times negative things happen to you. Like a lot of people suddenly want your money. All of these family members, all these people want to take this resource from you. It's a very public event. And so each of these circumstances, when we observe people getting money in these kind of thought experiments, a lot of different things happen, and not all of them are necessarily positive, and that's what makes it difficult to look at that evidence.
So, Adrian, let's talk a little bit about policy. If as you've pointed out, a lot of the evidence that we have is inconclusive, then this is one of those areas where it's really hard to be sure about what good policies are, I would guess. And one of those limitations, as you mentioned earlier, is that a lot of the research in this field comes from high income settings. How well do the insights from that research transfer to low income settings?
Well, I think there is some research in low income settings as well.
Yeah.
It's harder to measure income, but we do have some research from low income settings. I think that some things are transferable, but some things may not be. One of the things that we've observed is that there are things that have worked in rich countries that may not today work in poor countries because of the way that these countries work that is different. So, for example, we have developed vaccines, we have developed treatments for things like diarrhea that are today extremely inexpensive.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, in many poor countries, these treatments are not used, they're not widely available. A lot of people assume that the reason poor people in poor countries don't have access to these basic technologies that are pretty much universally used elsewhere, and we know are very effective, is that they somehow cannot afford them. But that happens not to be true. It's true about some things, like, for example, for a long time, HIV/AIDS treatment existed, but it was extremely expensive and complicated to administer. And that was the main reason why a lot of people in poor settings didn't have access to it. But there are other treatments that are not expensive and not difficult to administer and have not been adopted widely. So there are other reasons, there are other barriers that keep people from accessing cheap and effective technologies. And they have to do with physical distance, cultural norms, corruption in government, inefficiencies in how the healthcare system works and is delivered, lack of information, some things which are more easily addressed than others, like informing people. But even then, it can be very tricky. And we've seen this in during the COVID pandemic, right? Information is not neutral.
Mm-hmm.
It comes from someone. If it's the government, well, you may or may not trust the government, and that matters. Some things that seem obvious, we just inform people and give them money. Well, it turns out they're not so simple. Getting people to understand what you're saying and believe what you're saying and do the thing you want them to do is not so simple. And for a good reason, there are a number of historical experiences that people have learned from where they have learned not to trust information coming from the government or from foreign sources. So it turns out there can be many other barriers that prevent people and countries from adopting technologies that we do know that work.
But because of those many missed opportunities, is that a reason why using those successful public health program in a place where there is widespread poverty might have better outcomes than addressing poverty if we're thinking about health as the outcome?
It's an interesting question of what is the best policy? Is it better to give mm-hmm. people money? Is it better to give people education? Is it better to give them free healthcare? Is it better to do something else? You know, there is a dearth these days of research in trying to do these comparative analyses, which would be extremely helpful for policy, but which are often somewhat less interesting to academics in academic settings. Mm-hmm. I mean, these kinds of comparison questions are right on the mark. I think a policymaker would like to know exactly this. Tell me, what is the best bang for the buck? Which is the most effective policy that I can take among all these options? And I'm not really sure that we know the answer to that.
One thing that might grab the attention of the policymaker, considering the strong argument that you gave me about how poor health causes poverty.
Yes.
Can we argue that improving health is a good poverty reduction strategy?
I think that improving health is definitely a poverty reduction policy. But is it more effective than other policy reduction in poverty?
Yeah.
I'm not sure. It may or may not be. I'm not trying to be negative here. I'm just saying I don't have any numbers or any studies that would say, that is the best thing to do. It is a good thing to do. And I think it would have an impact on poverty. I mean, so in the United States, for example, an obvious problem that we have right now is the opioid epidemic.
Yeah.
And if you could effectively help those individuals or prevent the new individuals from falling into opioid addiction, that would probably be really helpful to those individuals. And we should do it, not just because it's going to help the economy, it's going to help them. Of course, that's a primary reason to do it, is it would be helpful for the individuals. But I think it would also be helpful them to their economic circumstance. But the world is a little more complicated, unfortunately. You know, many individuals that are having these issues have these issues for many reasons, but sometimes the individuals who are more susceptible to become addicted to these things are also in other difficult circumstances. You get rid of their addiction, but they're still in an area in which there are no jobs, in which there are no economic opportunities. That might be difficult, you know, and they may not necessarily come out of poverty just because they're no longer addicted.
So, Adriana, imagine that I am a policymaker. I'm in a low-income country. I am trying to improve the health of poor people. As you say, the evidence base might be more lacking than I imagined when I took on the job. If there was something that researchers could do to help me, if there was some piece of research, type of research that could help me, what would you think that would be?
We have a fair amount of evidence that having public health insurance systems is probably a very helpful way to go. Even here, though, I would say the evidence from low and middle income countries gives us some reason to pause, because it is quite difficult to organize a healthcare system to be effective for everyone. Uh-huh. But I think the evidence from rich countries and even from some poor countries suggests this is a very worthwhile endeavor. Almost every rich country that we know has some public health insurance program. I think we have a fair amount of evidence that this tends to improve individual health. The devil's always in the details, you know. We can have a public health insurance system that sounds good, that's available for everyone, and that's free. But, you know, if you then go to the hospital and there's nobody there and there are no drugs, or the people who are there are not well trained, or the hospital is many miles away, et cetera, then nominally, you have a public health insurance system that's free and available for all, but in practice, you don't. So there's an interesting challenge. You asked me about like the difference between rich and poor countries. There's an interesting challenge for poor countries about how exactly can they manage to have this system and how they can fund it with the limited resources that they have in order to deliver something to their populations. But I think we do know that that's a potential solution, but you have to work very hard in terms of how you achieve, and also probably have like reasonable expectations. And what I mean by that is that you asked me about the difference between rich and poor countries. And the difference is that rich countries today are producing a large number of innovations that are very effective, but they're very expensive. So poor countries are now in the business of trying to provide top-of-the-line treatment at top-of-the-line prices in economies that are limited in their amount of public funds. So how to do that? You know, it's nice to say we want to save everyone and give everybody the best care that is available. With limited resources, that's not something that countries can do. Another important thing, and I think that the US is not particularly good at this, is trying to get that public health system to focus on prevention instead of treatment. If you were today talking to me, have a heart attack, we bring you to a hospital and give you top of the line, high tech medical care, angioplasty, quadruple bypass surgeries, all sorts of things like that. And if you have access to that, it'll save your life and be very effective. But of course, it would be better if you didn't get the heart attack.
Yes, I'm on that side of the argument, yes, definitely.
And it would probably be much cheaper as well. So if we can also prevent and manage the conditions that people have before they get to the point where they need that high-tech intervention, that would also be very effective. And this is where other campaigns on maybe vaccinations or nutrition, exercise, managing stress, probably investing even in like things that we do very little today, like the mental health and mental well-being of individuals, would probably have large returns. in terms of saving healthcare systems from getting to the point where they need to do all the very high-tech kind of interventions. But then that requires a lot of trust between the government and its people, because you have to educate people. You have to tell them, here's what we think is good for you, here's what we think is bad. Even in the US, that turns out to be quite difficult.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
We have a lot of debate these days about what exactly is good and not good
for you. I've noticed that, yes.
That's the part that's difficult about prevention, you know. If I tell you this vaccine is great, but you think it's going to kill you, well, we have a problem.
Adriana, this is fascinating. There's so much more we could talk about, but we have run out of time. Thank you very much for talking about it today.
Thank you.
If you read this review, it's a really good example of how difficult it is to answer what might seem like quite straightforward questions, and how difficult it is, even when we have answers, to translate that to policy. It is called Poverty and Health. It is published in the Annual Review of Economics. The authors, Adriana Yeras-Mune, Hannes Schwant, and Laura Wery. This has been a Vox Dev Talk. Best way to make sure you don't miss an episode. Subscribe. You find us wherever you get your podcasts. Our past episodes, as always, at voxdev.org, where there are articles about the topics we feature. If you like what you're hearing, tell someone else about us. Leave us a review. Vox Dev Talks is a Talk Normal production. The assistant producer is Megan Bieber, and our editor is Andrei Zargarian. Thanks to Oliver Hanni and Iman Siddiq at Vox Dev.